Thank you for supporting AA. This is Saturday Night Live's Friday Night Speaker Meeting held at room 120 in the El Paseo Shopping Center in on 7/19/91 in San Jose. Tonight's speaker is John P. The original recording and its copy was made at Saturday Night Live. In accordance with tradition 11 and step 12 of AA, please do not break a speaker's anonymity or anyone else in AA at the public level. And please do not play this tape for commercial use. When the table is done, turn it over to continue. Thank you.
The speaker tonight is Patty P.
My name is Patty, and I'm an alcoholic. You know, when I heard that John was the speaker tonight, I said I would do this because I didn't think anybody would show up. John was the speaker, but I guess I blew that one. I've been trying all day not to think about what I was going to say up here, and I wish I could come up here and tell you that I have 5.5 years of sobriety. But last Friday night, about this time, I was loaded on my couch with a bottle of Seagram's next to me, with a bad attitude, thinking that I'd just go back to meetings again, you know, when I felt better. I also thought that I would be able to just take the edge off. My plan was that I was going to continue to go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings to learn how to do life, but I just needed something to take the edge off because there's a lot of stuff going on in my life. Things are falling apart, you know. My house is in foreclosure. I filed bankruptcy. Family broke up. You know, and after all, who could blame me? And I felt like I really needed something to take the edge off. And you know what I can tell you is that after 5.5 years of sobriety, I always thought I'd be afraid to take a drink, but once I decided to take a drink of alcohol, it was easy. I just drank it, and I laughed, and I thought, no big deal. And the thing that scares me is the attitude that I got myself into weeks before I took the drink, like it didn't matter, like it was a big joke. And, you know, after all, I had never had a job for a long period of time. I have kids now that I need to look after. I basically pay my bills on time. I had a checking account, and only because I just reopened it again, the fourth time in sobriety, and I have a driver's license and a car, and maybe I could drink and not let it control my life. And within a matter of 6 hours, I was obliterated, and I got on the phone and commenced to call everybody that I knew and told them what jerks they were. And and you know what? I really wish that people didn't own answering machines, because a lot of people have me on tape like that. It probably would have been a little bit easier to laugh off and to forget, but some people are saving them. And I got to hear one the other day, and it wasn't pretty. It really scared me. And a little bit about what it used to be like for me. I came from a family of 10 women, and I used to think that that's why I drank, because I didn't get enough attention. But I've always heard people come up here and say that they drank because they were only child. So, you know, I think that I drank because I was an alcoholic. My grandfather on my mom's side died of alcoholism when my mom was 18. My mother, I don't know if she died of alcoholism, but or just from having 10 daughters drive her nuts. But she died when I had my first year of sobriety. She died just after I had a year of sobriety. And I went through that sober. And I believe that this stuff that's going on in my life today, I just want to put it out there that I didn't have to take a drink of alcohol to get through it. I think I could have done it. I made a conscious decision to take a drink. And I can honestly say today that I wish I didn't. I was, just real quick, I think before I ever took a drink of alcohol, I had alcoholic behavior, or whatever you want to call it. I was a brat. When I was in kindergarten, I walked home from school after seeing a movie about strangers picking up little kids, and I thought, God, I wonder what would happen if that happened to me. And by the time I got home, I had this whole story worked out, and I had the schools in the area closed down for a week just from me not being able to tell the truth. I came home and told my mom, gave her a complete description of the car, and she said, you know what, go up and get out of your school clothes. And so I did, and I forgot all about it till I came down. There's two cops in my living room. And I thought, oh, my God. And so I gave him a complete description, and I didn't know how to turn it off. You know, I just thought if they just quit asking me questions and let this thing go away, and it didn't. And as soon as I got through that, I thought, I'll never, never do that again. And in fourth grade, I did the same thing. I said the same guy was at school with the gun, you know. And they closed down the schools only for one day that time. I kind of caught on. But you know what, I grew up feeling like I wasn't good enough, and I could just, if I could just hurry up and be a grown-up. I took my first drink of alcohol when I was 10 at one of our family get-togethers, and me and my sister were sipping drinks off people, and then we stole two beers, and we went out in the garage, and we drank them. And I thought, God, this is the greatest thing. And I wanted to get more. And she wanted to go play. We used to collect praying mantises. And she wanted to go play with the bugs. And I was like, well, there's lots of beer in there. And everybody's drunk. Let's do this, you know. And she wasn't interested. And that's all. From the time I was 10, it was like I couldn't wait to grow up. And it was like I wanted to do what I wanted to do when I wanted to do it. And I thought if I was a grown-up, I could eat all the food I wanted. I could go get all the ice cream. I could drink alcohol. I could smoke cigarettes. I could just do whatever I want. No one could tell me that I couldn't do it. Sadly enough, I grew up and found out that wasn't true. There's always people in my life telling me that I can't do things, like principals of schools, and I got kicked out of high school when I was, I guess it was my sophomore year, the first time around I got kicked out of high school. And before that time, I had been in and out of juvenile hall like 3 times, and I think growing up I was in and out like 13 times, you know. And it was never for anything big, mostly runaway, but I always had some good stories, you know, that what I really did, you know, and always trying to make life seem better than it actually was. And then that feeling of when I grow up, you know, things will be okay turned into, you know, when I'm 18, things are going to be okay. And if I get married, things are going to be okay. And I got married when I was about, I think it was 19 or 20 years old. And I just came out of a 5-year relationship. I met this guy at a party one night. And I thought, I remember looking at him and thinking, you know what, he looks like he doesn't give a shit about anything. And so I nabbed him, and I brought him home with me, and he never left. And I ended up moving into his house, and it was like the next thing to do was get married. And I never made a plan for myself. I always let circumstances direct me, and wherever I landed, that was that. And I ended up coming out of that marriage because I couldn't stay in it. I'd go off, started out like one day at a time, going out and finding other people to hang around with, and then it turned into week binges, and then I'd be gone for a month, and I'd always come crawling back, you know. And his family was real Christian, and he was this little mama's boy, and I was hanging out with bikers shooting dope, and it was like really mixed up behavior. And I'd have to come home and be a little Christian good girl again, and then I'd get crazy, and I'd have to go off to the other extreme. And I went back and forth, and they always took me back in. We finally got an apartment, and when I'd go out on my binges, he got smart and got 2 doorknobs. So when I left, he'd lock the door, and I couldn't get in, and you know, it just got real ugly. And the feelings that went around with it, you know, it was like, God, I just can't be hard enough or callous enough or quit feeling like so guilty and feeling like I'm not as bad as the people I was hanging around with. And if I could just commit some bigger crimes or just OD once so I could fit in. I remember the first time I went to jail as an adult, and I was so scared. I woke up on my jail bed, and there was this big, huge woman with bald head and no teeth in the front saying, good morning, honey, you get front line and breakfast. And I'm like, holy, what am I doing here? And so I got the front line and breakfast, and I was scared to death of what was going to happen. You know, everybody was being real nice to me, and I was probably 22 or 23 years old, and I thought, God. And I remember the cops coming by and looking in the window, seeing track marks on my arm, and looking at me going, what's the junkie doing, you know? And I thought, I'm not a junkie. Don't they know? You know, I come from a good family and a good background. And then having them look at my stuff that they found on me and saying, this isn't even any good. She's doing this for nothing, you know, and not never getting a clue that maybe I had a problem. It was just that I couldn't be hard enough and couldn't stay away from the cops. And I swore I would never, never, never do that again. I was done with drugs. I was done with alcohol. I was going to go back to my husband and stay there this time. And so I ended up calling a cab, going home. And as soon as I got home, I called the connection and said, guess what? I went to jail. You know, and it was a big joke. And I felt like I got another stripe or whatever it is. I came into the program when I was still married to that man, and I went through a 30-day program, and they told me, you know what, you have to be willing to go to any lengths, and we think that you need to go into a halfway house. And I thought, oh, my God. And the husband was on the other line saying, you know what, if you leave, I'll commit suicide. I can't live without you, da-da-da, all this stuff. And the hardest thing I ever did was say, you know what, I need to take care of myself. And they'd say, don't worry, he's not going to kill himself. But everything in me knew that he would kill himself, and he didn't. He ended up getting married to somebody who's, I don't know her, actually, but I'm sure she's very nice. But you know what? I got into this program. I went into that 30-day program thinking that hopefully the world will end before I get out. I was there for 30 days. I could eat and sleep. Nobody was going to bug me. And it was a real battle for me. I'd sit by the door at night and go, and I could just walk out whenever I want. And wondering, why am I not leaving? How come I'm staying here? And I know I'll not be able to stay here for 30 whole days. And I ended up staying for 30 days. And I remember the first AA meeting I came to, seeing I don't remember what his name was. Some guy up at the podium, he had hair down in the middle of his back. And And he looked cool to me, you know, because that's where I came from. And I was like, God, people like that stay sober, you know. And he said things like, I remember David Huff saying, or David H. saying that, you know what, come here and join us, be a part of the human race, he would say, and get involved in your life. And he said, you don't have to live that way anymore. And the message that I got is you don't have to drink and you don't have to take drugs. And this is a safe place to be. And I was, God, I was excited about that. It was like, God, maybe I can try to be a good person and still have the people that I could relate to, the alkies and the addicts, as my friends. And, I came here and I got involved in the steps. I remember going back from a meeting saying, calling my mom and saying, Mom, I found the solution. These people in AA are right on, and I'm so excited. And things are going to be different. And she'd say, yeah, Patty, we'll wait and see. She also told me, you know what, be careful of those people in AA, because, you know, sometimes they go to 3 meetings a week and they get a little carried away, and, you know, and I said, oh, God. You know what, when my mom died, when I had a year of sobriety, my sisters were told me that she was going to be dead in about a month and a half and she wouldn't make it to Christmas. And I thought, what are you talking about? I had no clue. And I went to her hospital bed and I crawled up in her lap and I made my amends to her. I'd made my amends to her other times, but I talked to her like I had never talked to her before, and I cried, and I said, Mom, I just hope we're okay. I hope I stayed sober long enough for us to be okay with each other. And I had done a lot of things to my family, and I just felt horrible, and I didn't want her to leave with that pain that both of us had felt. And she waited up a lot of nights for me. She used to tell me that she thought people would, every time she'd hear a car go by the house, she thought they'd roll me out on the lawn. And when I think about it now, I was 13 and 14 years old running around the streets of San Jose, you know, sleeping in gas stations and buses and parked cars and trying to stay up all night. And you know, it just tore my family up. And she told me that we were okay. She told me the story about the prodigal son. And she told me that the best thing in her life and the thing that she was most proud of is that her daughter had come home and that she was a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I had my first year of sobriety, my husband and my mom threw a big party, and my mom couldn't understand the connection that we all had. She said, God, these people, they just all care about each other. And I could see, because my mom drank, I could see that attracted her. She also told me that I had a gift that she was never able to get, which was sobriety. And she told me that if I ever took another drink again, I'd better watch out because she'd be standing behind me. And believe it or not, that kept me sober for a little bit longer than I did until I took a drink, because I was, you know, you never know with those weird things. You know what, I was real excited about sobriety. I was very involved. I was a tape coordinator. I'd secretary meetings. I'd work with new people. I'd be a greeter at the door. I'd pick up ashtrays. And I was real involved, and I was also doing my steps, reading the book, talking to my sponsor, and my life started to change. I learned how to go to work every day. I learned how to be functional in society. And you know what happened is I got divorced, stayed around here for a while. I tried to do the dating thing, which is not fun in these rooms. But I did find a husband here, and actually my mom died, and I got pregnant right after that. And I ended up getting married 3 months later, and it was like one thing after another. Again, circumstances led the way for me. I got pregnant. I had a baby. We bought a house. I got pregnant again. I had another baby. You know, it was like boom, boom, boom. All this stuff happened. And then here we are in Merced, California, in a four-bedroom house, brand new, 2 kids, both of us working. You know, I was self-employed at the time, and it was like we looked at each other and went, what do we do now? You know, it was like we forced ourselves to go for walks like they do, and it was very uncomfortable, and as a result of that, you know, I backed off from meetings because I didn't like the meetings in Merced, and I started thinking, you know what, I have 5 years anyway, I'm doing okay. And anyways, the marriage fell apart, and as a result, now that we're losing the house, and hopefully it'll sell, but you know, things just got real uncomfortable, and it was because I just let things go. I let it go, and I said, forget it, I don't care anyway. And as soon as the things that I thought that we're supposed to have in sobriety and supposed to have to be normal started falling away, I thought, you know what, I don't want it anyway. I don't want it. And I just kept saying that. And I got a bad attitude. And you know what, it's been a lot of months building up to me taking a drink of alcohol. But I did it. And you know what, I thought it was going to be a joke when I took a drink last Friday. I thought, you know what, I'll call the ex-husband and tell him what a jerk he is and tell him that it's his fault and all that kind of stuff. And what happened is I ended up losing my kids, and today I don't have my kids, 2 days later. Once again, I have to move, so my house is going again. And it's just a rental piece of shit, you know. But you know what? When I took that drink of alcohol, I don't suggest it to anybody, and I don't think it's the way to go when you hit a wall or you become complacent or you don't want to be sober anymore. There's ways to start over without taking a drink of alcohol. But when I took that drink of alcohol, I realized that I wanted to be sober, and I realized how fast. You know what? Because I laid down Saturday afternoon, trying to get the shakes to go away after having a couple beers, and I tried to quiet my mind and tried to meditate, you know, still trying to practice the principles, and I wanted to commit suicide, and that's what's next for me if I take another drink. So if you're new here, I suggest you keep coming back, use the tools that are here, and don't take another drink. Thanks.
Is John P. from San Jose.
My name is John. I'm an alcoholic. It's nice to be here tonight. Dan. Walked in, and it's kind of a change from the other place you guys used to be in. The first thing I noticed, there's carpet on the ground here, not on the wall. So we when we first moved over to the old place, there was a guy that was an ex-carpet salesman, and he had some carpet laying around. I mean, had rolls of it in his garage, and he said he didn't get fired for stealing carpet, but you know, we didn't bother to ask. But he had all this carpet, and he donated it to the group. And so what we ended up doing with it is we ended up putting the carpet all over the wall at Saturday Night Live when it was over on in Winchester, and we all thought that was rather normal. But if you think about it, there was never any carpet on the ground, and it was always on the wall, you know. Then we had a clock. I noticed you got a clock that works. And we had a clock that didn't work for years. You know, it was like stuck at like 2:30, which is like, if you think, it was like an Alky clock anyways. Like time never changed. You know, it stayed there consistently at 2:30. So it looks like things are... I just don't know if this is structurally sound, though, this room here. I walked in the low ceilings and the graffiti on the wall. But anyways, it looks nice. When I was asked to speak here, I thought about it. Because we usually drink on Friday nights at the house. And you know, I was listening to when Patty was talking, and I know there were some new people here tonight. How many people are new that didn't identify themselves as new? I mean, you know, are there any people that did not say that they were new? Okay. I mean, we're not gonna, no fun or anything. I just want to, is there anybody? Okay. You know, it's important to realize that not everybody is as fortunate to get drunk last Saturday night and then be a speaker at a meeting six nights later. And I think that's very important for you people that are newer, or some of you people that are thinking that you can go out and have a few belts and, you know, come back and, you know, even if people know, it doesn't really matter. Because, I mean, it just doesn't work that way. If it did, we all would do it. I mean, we'd, like, get drunk in the day and come to meetings at night, you know. I mean, it just doesn't work that way. So, I mean, Patty's very fortunate to be here right now. I mean, very fortunate. I'm sure she realizes that. But, I mean, I don't want people to think that, like, this is no big deal. You can go out and drink on Fridays, come to meetings on Saturdays. Because, I mean, there might be some people that can do that. But, I mean, I would say the majority of alcoholics could not do that. And you may be one that wants to, like, prove yourself in that minority that can. I myself know that I couldn't. I couldn't. Because, I mean, the way I drank before I came here was not... like I drink, then go to work, and maybe come home. I mean, I just drank. I didn't work. I didn't have a home. Nothing. I drank. That's what I did. And I don't think I could probably do something like that. But understand, for the new people, it doesn't work that way. I mean, please. I mean, the idea here is a length of sobriety over a period of time. Okay, consistently, one day at a time. Increments of like, well, sober 2 years and then drunk for a couple weeks and then sober 4 years and drunk for a month and then sober for a week and drunk for a year. I mean, that, and then we accumulate all that and we've got like 5 years sober, 3 years drunk. I mean, it really doesn't work that way. And I thought about that. I always just think, well, what the hell is the difference? I mean, you know, you're sober today and that's all that should matter. And you know what I've come to the conclusion, what really makes a difference in that is if you think about it, it's no different than somebody who might be into like losing weight or a health fanatic and they want to work out. And you just can't diet and work out for 3 months and then like pig out for 6 months and not work out and then do it for a year. Because what happens is you get to a period of time and your body can't take it anymore and you die. I mean, you have heart attacks and all these kind of things will happen. And what happens with the alcoholic, the day comes where no longer they have the ability to drink on a Friday and come to a meeting on Saturday and say, I'm back. Where's my desire chip? you know, it does. The day will come where they can't do that anymore. The way I understand alcoholism, you see, you just can't do it. I mean, you know, and once again, I'm sure that if we could, we all would be doing it. You see, like right now, I can tell you, if I could be out right now, if I was absolutely positively sure that I could be out right now on a Friday night getting drunk, knowing that I'm going to come home sometime within the next 24 hours, right? Knowing that I was had the ability to get up on Monday and go to work, I would be so drunk right now, it wouldn't be funny. I would be, for me. And I don't have any assurance that I could do something like that. All I know is from the way I used to drink, and by coming to enough meetings for a long period of time and looking at the pattern of my life and identifying with enough people that were alcoholics to realize that I had lost the ability to control my drinking. I no longer had that ability to say, well, I think tonight I'm just going to go out and get like this drunk and just about get thrown in jail and then I'll come home and try it again tomorrow. I mean, I lost that ability by that point in time. And you know, the thing to realize for each and every alcoholic, I guess, is to find out if they are, and if they are, it's time to make a change in life. And that's what I had to do almost 14 years ago. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I was no different than most people that are new. I mean, I sat in the back of the room, and I was, Patty said something tonight when she was talking about the attitude. The worst, the death of an alcoholic is the attitude of indifference. I don't care. That's the death of an alcoholic. Because alcoholics care. We need to always have something to care about. Okay, we need to be on a crusade. That's why Alcoholics Anonymous works so well for people like us. We go on a crusade, man. We start getting the fire, and all of a sudden we want to start grabbing people and telling them they're an alcoholic and telling them they need to go to meetings. You know, I mean, we really get into this stuff, you know. And, I mean, you know, Christians don't have anything up on us, man, when it comes to this kind of a deal. You know, we start getting in there, and, you know. It becomes like a pilgrimage, you know. And what happens is that, you know, we need something to care about. I don't care if it could be a people, person, or a thing. I mean, it doesn't really matter. I mean, just something to care about. And when an alcoholic gets to a point where they have the attitude of indifference, which is the attitude I came to Alcoholics Anonymous with, I didn't know that's what it was. I didn't know what it was. All I know is that people say what's wrong, so I don't care. And they say, that's indifference. I said, I don't care, but that was indifference, okay? That's a bad attitude for an alcoholic. Because an alcoholic, if they don't have something to care about, they don't have any reason to go on. And that's one of the biggest fears most alcoholics have when they come to the program, like I did. What am I going to do with all my time now that I'm not drinking? That was the only thing I could think about. Nothing else. I didn't think about, geez, how am I going to get out of that orchard? The car doesn't work. I'm divorced. I don't have any food, no money. I mean, I'd been that way before, and I was that way at the time, and that was no big deal. I mean, I'd been there before, but my biggest concern is now what am I going to do with all my time now that I'm not drinking? That was a big fear. And I was advised by people in Alcoholics Anonymous, not directly but indirectly, that I had to start doing things that I had never done, like maybe get a job, you know, get a haircut, even though it doesn't look like I have. I mean, you know, but back then, I mean, you know, long hair. My hair was, you know, longer then. You know, I got a haircut and I started dressing differently, started acting differently, started being differently, started hanging around different kinds of people, and I started hanging around the kind of people that I used to laugh at in life, you know. I started hanging around, you know, AA goody-goodies, you know what I mean? You know, the ones that would say, oh, yes, put my name on the diverter. I'd love to go on a 12-step call this evening. You know. Or I'd say, fuck, let's go on that fun tonight, man. You know, hell with these 12-step stuff, right? You know, or people would say, well, geez, you know, I really can't go to the coffee shop this evening because I must go home and take care of my children because they have a test tomorrow at school or something. And, you know, I couldn't relate to that crap. So I started hanging around those people because I was told that, you know, your way didn't work, it got you here, okay, and you need to live a different way of life and you need to learn how to live a different way of life. So, I mean, I started, you know, hanging out with the kind of people that that I never thought I'd hang out with before. And I sat in the back of the room with a attitude of indifference. And, you know, I remember early on in meetings I'd sit back and somebody would stand up at a meeting and they'd say, you know, I'd like to thank everybody here for my sobriety. It's so wonderful. And I'd like to thank God. If it wasn't for God, I wouldn't be sober. And, you know, I'd sit back there saying, Jesus, got Bible thumpers around this place, man. You know. And the next guy would stand up and say, you know, my name's Bill, and I just love Jim. He's grown so much since we've been here. And say, Jesus, we got homosexual Bible thumpers around here, you know. You know. You know, so I kept coming back, you know. I mean, people say, keep coming back, you know. And at first I thought, yeah, they want me around here. I know, you know, they need me. That's why they want me to keep coming back. And, you know, I learned later on when they tell you that is because you really need to keep coming back. I mean, you know, when they stop telling to keep coming back, it means that, you know, it's time for you to start telling others to keep coming back, you know. But I started coming to the meetings and I started hanging around all these people that I never thought I'd hang out with. And I'd go to the meetings and you know, after the meetings, we'd go to the coffee shops. And in the coffee shops, we'd talk about the big book and steps. And we talk about, you know, maybe what Bill Wilson was talking about when he was writing the steps and get into all this stuff. And I mean, I was inundated with AA. That's what I was brought up on, AA, AA. And I remember being about 6 months sober, and I had a chance to have dinner with Chuck Chamberlain. I can say his name because he's passed on now. And he looked at me and he said, "How old are you?" And I said, "I'm 23." And he said, "Well, when you're my age..." And at that time, I think he was about 74, 73 years old. He says, "If you stay sober till you're my age, you'll be sober 50 years, and nobody has ever done that." Now, since then, I know we have somebody who's now a member of AA who's been sober 50 years. But at that time, that had never happened. And it was, like, amazing. I mean, I'll always remember having dinner with Chuck Chamberlain. I mean, Chuck Chamberlain knew, like, Bill Wilson, and he was, like, you know, he even wrote a book, or Clancy wrote it for him, I guess. I don't know. I was kind of kid Clancy about that. I said, "Who's getting the royalties on it? Anyways, Clancy." So, you know, I mean... That's something I'll never forget, that kind of an experience, you know. But I went to these coffee shop with these goody-goody AA people, and you know, we would sit there and we'd do nothing but AA. We talked AA. I mean, I wasn't really in an environment when I got sober that was conducive to maybe going out and having fun after a meeting. Because, I mean, there was nobody to have fun with. I mean, really, there was nobody really to have fun with. Most of the people were a lot older, and I mean, a lot of them were relatively stable, or if they weren't, they were so guilty about their lives being so screwed up and they were too old to do anything about it that, I mean, they wanted to at least try to make the last few years decent. So, I mean, I just kind of hung out with them because, I mean, the alternative was, you know, go out to the bars and drink 7-Up while everybody else is getting drunk and having more fun than I was. So I just started going to these coffee shops and going to meetings, and I just got inundated with AA, and I was reading AA books, and I'd listen to AA tapes, and that's all I did for about the first 6 months I was sober. Nothing but that. Two meetings, three meetings a day, and I got two part-time jobs eventually because I was afraid that I'd get fired from one of them, you know, because I was unemployable. I'd never really worked before I got here, and I was, you know, a high school dropout and divorced, and like I said, I was out in the streets, and, you know, I was going through another one of those bad moments, that sometimes would last long periods of time. So I got involved with Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had some interesting experiences. I mean, I had a lot of fun looking back now. And even at the time, it was kind of fun. But, I mean, looking back, I had great time. I'm glad I had the foundation of Alcoholics Anonymous I did. I mean, I had a good time. I remember being asked to run for secretaryship at St. Luke's meeting one Tuesday night. And I was sober, I don't know, 4 months, 3 months, whatever else. I mean, like, I was still had one eye on an airplane, the other one on a submarine, you know. I was, like, walking around just real happy to be alive, you know. And I said, "Sure, I'll try it." I said, "Who am I running against?" He said, "Johnny O." And Johnny O had started St. Luke's. And usually when you're the starter of a meeting, I mean, you know, if you want to be the chairperson or secretary, you know, they let you do it. And I mean, I was like a pawn in the chess game on that one. So I said, "God, I'd love to," you know. So at that time, they used to have a ballot where they give you a piece of paper and a pencil, and you write it down, and you know, instead of raising your hand so everybody sees who you're voting for. And you know, I wrote down, you know, who I voted for, and everybody wrote it down. They put it in the hat, and they were going through it, and it says, you know, "Johnny O, Johnny O, Johnny O, John P." I said, "Who voted for him?" And I said, "Yeah, who voted for me?" And it was me, obviously, that voted for me. I didn't know Johnny O was supposed to win by a landslide. You know, he got one vote against him, and that was mine. But yeah, I mean, you know, and they told me to keep coming back after that meeting, too. After I came out of the ether, man, I really got angry. You know, what's going to happen is if you've been sober like less than like a year, okay, you haven't got to the point really where all the emotions are going to start going nuts. And when you hit about 5 years, and when I was newer, I used to hate when people said, "Well, you know, your first 3 years are this way, and your first," and it really isn't, except I know one thing. 5 years to 10 years is very difficult. Okay, and anybody who tells you it isn't, probably hasn't gotten there yet, or check their pupils, okay? I mean, because it's a period of time that gets very rough. I mean, it's almost like the first few years, you know, just on osmosis and the fact that, you know, you don't smell like shit and feel like it in the morning, you know, you can kind of keep it going. But there comes a point in time after that you know, you got to start doing certain things to kind of keep the momentum going. In some cases, we even have to get a sponsor and work the steps at that time. And a lot of times, too, we find out the guys we're hanging out with in the coffee shop after and all that, they're drunk and there's nobody else to play with. Which is really kind of what the book's all about, if you think about it. See, they talk about Alcoholics Anonymous. The main purpose of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous, the main purpose is in order for us to find a power greater than ourselves that will solve our problem. Period. That's it. And it's got nothing in there that says, well, the main purpose of the book is to be able to go to meetings and meet people to socialize after the meetings with, or, you know, the main purpose of the meeting is to be able to go out and learn how to dance better sober, or the main purpose of the meeting is to be able to become employable and be able to become potent and have children again, or whatever the case may be. None of those things. It's the main purpose of the book is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself that will solve your problem. And I listen to people and I hear people. I've got some people I know that are very close to me. They say, God, I'm sure glad they got midnight meetings now, because I go nuts and I run over to a meeting. In the middle of the week, they go nuts and they go run over to a meeting. They didn't have midnight meetings. I think we had one midnight meeting. Well, we had an 11 o'clock meeting in Sunnyvale when I got sober, and that was usually, the topic was relationships. It was on Saturday night, and all of us that didn't have a relationship were at the meeting. You know. Waiting for a girl to get called on who wanted to tell us how horny she was. And you know. And some of us were going to, like, have 12-stepper after the meeting. And, you know, but it was really fine. You always have some guy share with me on relationships, and he talked for 20 minutes about not having one, then you knew why he didn't have one. But see, the main purpose of the book is to find a power greater than yourself that will solve your problem. So when I hear somebody say, God, I'm going nuts, I got to run to a meeting, I don't have the luxury anymore of doing that. See, right now I'm married, I got 4 children, I got a lot of responsibilities. Do you know how many times I'd like to drop things? I wouldn't run to a meeting, I'd run to Tahiti. You know, I mean, I need to get away, okay? And I've learned that I work things out with a power greater than myself. That's what I was taught, and that's what I learned. And silly me, that's what it's about, you know. I can't tell you half the people's names I used to go to coffee shops with when I was newer. I can tell you right now, 99.9% of them are probably drunk or dead or in jail. Thank God I didn't follow them. I mean, what I did is I listened to the people, and they told me, you know, what this program is all about. You don't take the first drink, you won't get drunk. You get a sponsor and work the steps, and you find a power greater than yourself that'll solve your problem. And that's what I found. I have found that power. And it's interesting, but the problem in life is also the solution in life. Okay? The problem in life is exactly the solution in life. And it's so simple, though. I mean, it really is. I mean, we all have daily problems. We all have daily turmoils. We all have things that happen. But, I mean, the fact is that we grow through these things. That's what it's about. I remember being almost 7 years sober, and I was living on a member's couch of AA. As a matter of fact, actually, I supplied the couch, but I was sleeping on it. And this is another story completely. And I mean, I was broke, and you know, I was divorced again, second divorce. And but it wasn't my fault this time. And we'll talk about her in a minute, but. We'll talk about her right now, actually. If it wasn't for her, you probably wouldn't have a meeting here right now, because she was really the motivation behind the whole meeting. It was the second wife I had. God, next time I got it. I've only had 3, but when you go over like 36 years, 37 years, that's not bad, okay? If I'd have gotten married when I was 2, it would be all right, I guess, the first time. But she was the great motivation behind Saturday Night Live. When we started out, what it was is I wanted to have a Saturday night meeting, because I had a marriage that I brought a girl back from Texas, and she was, you know, young. I was a lot younger then too, but she was very young. She'd even be young for today's standards. you know. And I'll tell you, she was fine until around Friday at 3 in the afternoon, and then all of a sudden, you know, she'd have like a personality change, you know, like, I'm going to go out and have fun. And I said, well, dear, let's go to a meeting this evening. She says, no, I have to have fun. And I said, well, we're going to go to a coffee shop after the meeting. Isn't that fun? Yeah. You know, I knew what her fun was, you see, but unfortunately her fun didn't include me. And so I figured, okay, if we got like a Saturday night meeting together, at least, you know, we could kind of keep her from salivating too bad on Saturdays. And a couple of us got together and started a Saturday night meeting, and it was all based on that relationship. And the fact was, it basically started out as a relationship type meeting. And it was kind of funny because a lot of people that didn't have relationships started getting them after the first couple of meetings with Al-Anons. The Al-Anons kind of came. They were kind of almost like the WACs were in the wartime, I guess, you know. Are there any members of Al-Anon here this evening? Just kidding. No, I'm all for Al-Anon because I think in any balance sheet you should have a asset and a liability, so it's good. So, but guys are thinking he wouldn't say that if this is a room full of Al-Anons. I would too, you know. I would too. Then I'd run like a son of a gun. I'll tell you right out that door over there. I forgot to tell you, I'm an adult child of a normal family. I didn't tell you that either, did I? That's another thing. I used to hear people talk about being children of alcoholics, and they'd tell me about their upbringing, and I'd get so jealous hearing about it because that's such a normal way of life for me. I mean, you don't understand what I had to go through. We used to eat dinner every night at the same time, at the table. You hear me? At the table. My dad would come home every night without any booze on his breath. Never once slapped my mom. Never once called her slut, whore. My mom never ever brought a guy home other than my father. Okay? And I would hear you guys tell your stories about, you know, your mom's doing this and your dad's doing this, and I get so jealous, you see, because it's so funny. I lived that way of life the first time I got married. Nobody taught me how to do that. Nobody in the world taught me how to do that. It was very difficult for me sitting in a family being brought up like that, knowing that they lived weird, okay? Knowing that they wanted to go to church on Sunday, you know. My grandmother would come into town and they'd do the rosary at night. Ugh. I mean, you know, it's dreadful shit. And I was brought up with that stuff. When I come to meetings and I hear people talk about the way they were brought up, and I get jealous. I think, shit, I got gypped again, you know? You know? It would have been such a normal way of life for me. But anyways, but I, you know, 6 years sober, I'm broke. Broke. Nothing happening. Divorced. A lot of pressure. 6 years sober, you know, you're supposed to have it somewhat together by then, right? Sponsored lots of people, you know. I was living in Texas when I was about 3 years sober, and I remember that's when I started getting a little off base. That's when I knew I was, well, I didn't know at the time I was having problems, but in retrospect I could look back and see that's when I was having problems, because her and I had a place together, and we were living together, and I'd have guys come over to our place. We had a nice big place, and the kind of place I always dreamed about. You know, I'd finally got a job in sobriety, and I'd start making a couple dollars in savings, so I had a place to live. And we had these guys come over, and I listened to their fourth steps when I was sponsoring them, and they would leave, and I'd say, well, you know, now go home and, you know, ask God to remove all this stuff, you know. And I'd close the door and I'd say, Jesus Christ, these are some sick fucking people, man. Yeah. I say, I got to start going to some other meetings here, maybe in a better part of town or something. I don't know, you know. So I knew I was starting to get way off base, you know, when I was really, like, I could relate, but by the same token, I couldn't relate like as me. It was almost like I felt like I was Sybil or something, you know. I mean, there was a personality there somewhere that was like that at one time, but it's not like that anymore. So I started getting off base, and, you know, I can tell you right now that what I was doing at 3 years, I did stay sober 6 years, but all that stuff is what ended me up where I was at 6 years. I started making really weird decisions, bad decisions based on self, like the book talks about. You know, it put me in a position where I was. The main thing is that I didn't take a drink during that period of time, because if I did, I wouldn't probably be standing up here tonight. If I did, I would be standing up with a lot less continuous sobriety. you know, I mean, things happen. I mean, they're always going to happen. I mean, thank God they happen, or else it'd be pretty boring. I mean, like, what if somebody came up to you? I mean, we can all say, yeah, this would be nice. But realistically, somebody comes up to you and says, hey, you know what? Let's say a guy's 25 years old. Hey, the rest of your life is all taken care of. Don't worry. You might have a few little pitfalls, but hey, don't worry. It's all right, man. You can have all these great things happen when you're like 70 years old. Here's a quick little picture of it. Man, you got it made. All you have to do is just kind of stay on this little path, right? Wouldn't it be nice? But it probably wouldn't be. You know, we'd screw it up probably, you know. But the fact is it really will be all right, you know. I mean, my sponsor, he's here tonight, my sponsor, and I'm not going to break his anonymity, but he's like in his 70s. He's really old. And, oh, that's right, I can't mention your name. Your age was all right. That was right. I see that everything has turned out all right. Everything has turned out all right. I need to see that everything is going to be all right. I mean, I've been sober a long time, but I still need results, and I need positive results. You know, and I need to look at the people that have walked before me and have said, yeah, I've been where you were at this time, and I was at where you were at this time. When I was like 20 years sober, this was going on. You know, so I know that, hey, it's all right. Whatever I'm going through, it's all right. It's no big deal. You know, it seems like it's the worst thing that's ever going to happen. You know, whenever you're going through something, it is the worst thing. I thought we announced no coffee during the speaker for respect. What is this shit? What is this? Oh, you're going. Oh. Oh, sorry. Going to an Al-Anon meeting, huh? Blowing the whistle on me. Who's out there going, taking my picture. He's going to place it in all the Al-Anon meetings around town. Are you guys taxing coffee now as a snack around here? Oh, you're non-profit. That's right. You don't have to. Anyways, getting back to, I used to drink too. I don't do that anymore. It's enough of that shit. No. It's funny, you come to AA, I know there's new people here that are saying, let's see, the guy drinks on Fridays once in a while. I don't even know if he's ever drank. He's never even mentioned anything about a drinking escapade. I mean, wonder if he even knows what it looks like. Yeah. I think the guy's a fucking phony. I bet somebody's thinking that. Yeah, I don't care what you think. Really, I mean, I'm a happily married guy. I got kids. I'm employed. I'm not drinking. I love it, you know. But I used to think the way you did. I used to look at the guy and say, he's a phony. He doesn't know shit, you know. Or if he really knew how to drink, he wouldn't be sitting up here sober. If he's a real man, he'd be drunk talking, right? I think it'd be kind of funny if they, at the end of the meeting, they do like they do at the bars at 2 in the morning when it closes, we all stand around in the circle, do the Lord's Prayer, and say, keep coming back, it works, right? Wouldn't that be funny? That'd be a real popular bar, wouldn't it? Hey, let's go close that one tonight. I'm a member of the We Deal With Alcohol group, and it's a nice, quaint little group. We don't have to, you know, a big meeting might be like 40 people or so. And it's a nice group of people there, and it's interesting, but a lot of the people that go to that meeting, there are a lot of the people that I got sober with, and they were like sober 5, 10, 15 years when I got sober. And it's really interesting to see them now and for me to see the way they are now and to really think that, you know, they seemed a lot weller to me when I was new, right, than they do now that I'm a little, you know, out of the ether, right? So anyways, you know, I'm 6 years sober, and I'm, you know, things aren't going right, you know? So what are you going to do? You know, you're going to be a chicken shit and stop going to meetings and, you know, get drunk, or you're going to do something about it? And I wanted to be a chicken shit and get drunk and not go to meetings. But I had a lot of people in AA that I was hanging around because, you know what, I learned way back in the beginning, you know, I go to meetings, and I associate with people that aren't drinking. We talk about the big book and the steps, you know? So, I mean, I was brainwashed from all that years of AA garbage where it was almost impossible for me to go out and just, you know, screw it up. And I had some tough experiences. It was very rough at that period of time, very humiliating. You know, I mean, when you had been down and out and got it together, and then you get down and out again, and, you know, you're sober, and all of a sudden you see these people that are newer coming in behind you, and all of a sudden they're becoming shining stars. You know, and they're kind of like saying, here's five, baby. Hold you over till you get a job again. And, you know, and don't even pay me back. Just, you know, pass it on to someone else who needs it. Kind of shit I do to them. You know, it pisses you off. You know, you get it right back in your face. And I remember one guy I was sponsoring. It was a very, It was a funny situation because he was on his ninth step, and he had left his family being his mother and father and all that, about 5 years earlier, and we were at the ninth step, and it was time for him to make amends, and the ninth step says we may direct amends wherever possible, except to do so, injure others. And I said, it's time to go out and talk to these people, because we'd done an eighth step. We'd gone down and said, okay, this is somebody you need to go see, being your family. Oh, I can't go see them. I left 5 years ago. Well, see, what he did is he was at the dinner at the house, and it was like his grandmother's 90th birthday. Okay, not that she would have missed him after, you know, 5 years, but still, it was her 90th birthday, and they were said, pass the mashed potatoes, and after he passed the mashed potatoes, he walked out of the room and never came back. And that's kind of the way it really happened. He just kind of, you know, up and went. And I said, you really need to go make amends to these people. Oh, I can't. You don't understand. I said, well, listen, man, you know, we did the first step. Right? You said you were powerless over alcohol. Your life was unmanageable. Okay? We found a power greater than yourself that could take care of that problem. You know, you made a decision in the third step to do something about that problem, and you really did because you did a fourth step. And then once you did that, we got together and we looked at your fourth step and said, fine, you're finished with your fifth. Go to God and do six and seven. We just got done doing the eighth step. You got to do the ninth step. If you don't do it, you're going to die. You're going to get drunk. Or you're going to do either of those. I don't know, but you're not going to be hanging around me anymore if you don't do the ninth step. You got to go see these people. You know, and I mean, like I told you, I'm down on my luck and everything else, but I'm still kind of giving the old AA pitch, you know. And so, you know, he went out and made the amends, and he calls me up about 5 days later and says, God, you know what? I really want to thank you. It was the greatest thing that ever happened. I really want to thank you, you know. And I'm sitting there saying, yeah, I'm really happy for you. He says, no, really, it's great. It's just a whole difference in my life. He said, it's fantastic. I made amends, and my grandmother, on her 90th birthday, she died like about 6 months later, and I was left $50,000 that the attorneys had in trust till I came back. And I'm back, and I've got 50 grand now that I didn't have before we made the ninth step. And I'm thinking there should be at least a referral fee for me on that, you know. I mean, you know. I say if it wasn't for me, he'd have never got the money. So, I mean, you know, you do that stuff, and I mean, hey, that's a license to drink. You got a guy that you're sponsoring doing better than you. He doesn't even believe in God as much as you do, and he's getting all these great things happening, you know. But, you know, you just don't take the first drink, and you won't get drunk, and you get through some of these times, and you're sure glad you did, you know. I heard a guy talk years ago up in Washington when I was on one of my sober geographics. Not National Geographic, that's Sober Geographics. And he was talking about he was really glad he didn't get drunk yesterday. He said because he was really having a good day today. Think about that. I mean, he was really glad he didn't get drunk yesterday because he was having a great day today. And, I mean, I can dig that. I mean, I've been there. I know what the guy's talking about. I mean, there's a lot of times that, I mean, I just wish, you know, this whole thing would stop, and then the next day I'm glad it didn't, you know. That's why they say it's a day at a time. No slogans around here? We've got graffiti. Oh, one day at a T-I-M-E. Okay, one day at a time, right. One day at a time. That's what one day at a time is all about. You know, it's just one day at a time. And then I remember when I was first sober, the idea of staying sober one whole day was I couldn't conceive that. You see, because later on in my drinking, I used to ask people to tie me up. Okay, I wasn't in the kinky shit, okay? I'm just telling you, though. I mean, this is so I wouldn't drink. Anyways, no, really. I just tie me up, my arms and everything, so I couldn't get a drink. I wanted to get till noon. If I could just get to noon without a drink, I figured it was a good day, okay? And the idea of not taking a drink for one full day, I couldn't conceive that. So they said, well, break it down into 1 hour at a time. And if you have to, you can even break it down into 1 minute at a time. Like, just for this minute, I'm not going to drink. Just for this minute, I'm not going to drink. Just for this second, I'm not going to drink, you know? And it's really interesting, but those seconds turn into minutes, they turn into hours, they turn into days, and, you know, I mean, I really don't think about drinking much anymore, you know? I mean, I even see ads on TV, even though there aren't a whole lot of alcohol ads anymore on TV. There used to be a lot of them, and I don't even think about, boy, that sure looks good. I'd like to have that. I mean, there was a time, you know, when I'd look at the ads on TV and, you know, kind of like drool a little bit and look around and see if anybody was watching. Because that's kind of sacrilegious if you're in AA and you look at those things and kind of have vicarious experiences with those guys out there having a lot of fun. I remember one ad. I'm in advertising, so I look at the way ads are put together, and I know kind of the game that they're after. And first of all, ad companies do not make ads for alcohol for social drinkers. Okay, if they depended solely on social drinkers, first of all, they would never have publicly held companies, and number two, they'd all be bankrupt, okay, because social drinkers don't buy the alcohol to keep those companies going. It's people like us. And those ads are geared for people like us. Look at them. You know, I saw one ad one time, you know, two guys playing handball and they were sweating, and the guy was, you know, I'm going to beat you, Bill, you know. And then the caption was, would two guys go out this hard for a beer? And I was looking at that. And, hey, I went to parties before, man, when there were eight guys almost stabbing each other for a half a can of beer with fucking cigarette butts in it, you know what I mean? Because it was the last one left, okay? So, yeah, I've seen lots of guys go out that hard for a beer, you know? You know, but you see, these ads, I mean, they were made, you know, for people like me. You know, you got some beautiful girl, and they got a bottle next to her, and you know, I mean, it's just, it's like, you know, you look at it and go, you know, I know if I get that bottle, I can get her, you know. And then when I was younger, I knew, God, if she was of age, she could get the booze for me, you know. Yeah. Alcoholics Anonymous can be fun. My life is different. The last 5 or 6 years of my life have been different. I got to a place, and I was one when I used to hear people talk about, wait till you get the double-digit sobriety. You know, wait till you hit 10 years, you'll start seeing things a little differently. And I don't like to be one that puts time frames and time limits on things. I know there's some people sitting around here with 7 years saying, my life's together. I don't know what that guy's talking about. And you probably, maybe you're in a minority. I mean, maybe that's fine for you. But I mean, I'm just saying for the what I've seen, what I experience and everything else, is that once I got to 10 years, I mean, all of a sudden, I started seeing things at like almost a different level. And I'm not saying that once you hit that time, boom, it changes. But things all started being put together in my life. And I guess they call it sobriety. You see, it all started meshing. The whole thing started making sense. You know, the idea, I haven't asked myself in many years now, you know, in the morning when I'm, you know, shaving or in the shower and I'm just kind of staring off into space, you know, what's this thing all about? I mean, why am I doing this? I mean, why am I washing my hair to get dressed? I mean, this is, you know, shit. I mean, why am I going through all this crap? I mean, we're all going to die pretty soon, you know. I mean, how long do you live? You know, who cares, you know. And I mean, I don't have to ask myself those things anymore, but there was times in my sobriety I used to. I mean, there were times in my sobriety I go to meetings and, you know, I end up talking at the meeting. Everybody say, boy, that was great. You sure helped me out and all this kind of stuff. And I mean, I go home and I want to run the car off the cliff. Man, I was dying, man. I mean, I couldn't tell people what was wrong, you know, because I'd gotten to a place where I couldn't tell people what was wrong. And I remember being about 7 years sober and going to my sponsor and saying, hey, there's something wrong. And I told him what was wrong. He said, I can't relate to you. I can't help you. And I went, huh? What? And I mean, couldn't help me anymore. So I sat down with another person and I told him where I was at. And he smiled. He says, yeah, I was there too. He said, but I was there when I was like 20 years sober. And I went, oh, I'm going to do this again at 20? He said, no, you don't have to. You know, and I found somebody who would relate and somebody who would understand. And the problem was that what I had to do was get to a point in my life where I had to find a power greater than myself that could solve my problem. And that's what it boiled down to. You see, all this other stuff I ran on, all this AA goody-goody stuff I ran on for a long time, you know, going to conferences and speaking and being in charge of coffee committees and being chairman of the group and being secretary of meetings and taking care of the collections and all, I mean, you know, all this activity is great and it's fine and dandy. But the day came, man, when you get tired of running, man, you got to stop for a minute. And once you stop, it's like, well, all this stuff that's been going on for a long time starts catching up, you know. And man, you either got the option to keep running again, or you just let this stuff bowl you over. And what happened to me is I couldn't run anymore. I was burned out. See, because I got here at 23, like I said, but I was like on my fourth body already, okay? So I didn't have, I mean, I was tired at that time already, okay? I mean, I was tired already at 23, you know? And I'd been running sober now for like 5 years, 6 years. Dead run sober. And the day came where I couldn't do it anymore. And I couldn't get the kind of help I needed until I sat down with somebody and they said, you know, I know where you're at. I've been there. And my problem was the same problem I had when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I didn't know it. My problem was the same one. And, you know, if you're sitting out there and you're thinking, oh, this relationship with God, crap. I mean, that's all they ever talk about here. I mean, you know, is that, you know, really it is. I mean, that's really it. I mean, think about life. And when you think about what is there? I mean, you know, what is there? I mean, there's got to be that. I mean, all this other stuff is just mundane bullshit. I mean, look at the world. I mean, look what goes on in the Middle East with all that garbage. You know, and then look at the way people drive cars around here. And then look at the crap the IRS does. And then look at the judicial system and on. I mean, we can go on we go to the bar and listen to this shit, right? But I mean, look at all these issues, right? And if you don't believe there's a God, you better, because, I mean, look at this crap that's going on. I mean, this, it's nuts. I mean, it's really nuts. We live in a nuts world. Okay? This world is nuts. And I mean, I hear people at meetings say, oh, God, since I've gotten sober, my life's patched together and the world is beautiful. And then I like to go up to them after the meeting and say, you know, I flattened the tires in your car out in the parking lot. You think life's wonderful now? You know, but, I mean, really, you know, so I mean, I got to get it together here. I got to get together here because this is the world. This is my world right in here. This is where it's at, you know. And I mean, there's going to be some people I want to share that with, and there's going to be some people I refuse to share it with, and I'll never share it with some people. And there's some people in this room I probably would never share it with. Well, present company excluded. Actually, I'd share it with all you guys, but those Al-Anons, never, right? But, no, I'm kidding. But, you know, that's what I needed, you see, because I drank alcohol. Well, they did a study years ago in Ohio, at the University of Ohio, and they spent $10 million in 5 years, okay, which now in this era would probably be $100 million they would have spent for the same study. And the conclusion they came to is that alcoholics drink because they like the effect. Right? $10 million they spent on that. Okay? How much are books nowadays? I haven't bought one in a while. What are they? $4.80? $5? They charged me $6 at another meeting. Uh-oh. I'm going to go back over there and get my dollar back. You know, they could have bought a book for $5 and read Dr. Silkworth's story in there, of his opinion of alcoholism and alcoholics. And right there, he states very clearly, alcoholics drink because they like the effect it produces, period. Or they could have gone to a meeting and put a fucking dollar in the basket and figured that out, right? They spent $10 million. That's 10 million meetings they could have gone to, right? But see, that's why I drank. I like the effect. I like what alcohol did to me. I like where it put me. I like the people that did it. I like the places it was. I liked getting drunk. Okay? I loved getting drunk. From the first time I ever got drunk, I loved getting drunk. I'll tell a drunk story just in case there's somebody out there who really needs to hear one. Okay? I don't want anybody leaving here tonight thinking the guy didn't talk one drunk story. Okay? Because I used to, like, once in a while, I'll go to the meetings and I wanted to hear some of the racier kind of stories that women would tell, and I'd feel kind of cheated when I left if I didn't hear one of those, you know, housewife cheating on her husband stories at the meeting. And, you know, there might be somebody out there that has the same feeling I do. They need to hear a drunk story. So I'll share with you the first time I got drunk. And it was a significant time because, like most people I've ever heard in Alcoholics Anonymous, I remembered the first time I got drunk very vividly. I knew where it was. I knew what I was wearing. Okay, I knew the first time I got drunk, and most people I've gone to meetings and speaker meetings for many years. I heard thousands of speakers, and they all pretty much remember the first time they ever got drunk. It's a very momentous occasion for alcoholics to get drunk. I mean, it was just I don't remember the first time I had sex. Really don't. I don't remember the first time I had a cigarette. Okay, but I do remember the first time I got drunk. And I was 14 years old, and I was seeing this girl, I guess. I mean, at 14, I don't know what you do. I mean, she was like 14 too. Yeah, we were like looking at each other. Yeah. How come you're getting older looking at me so fast? Women mature quicker than men. That's why. So I was seeing this girl, and I was over at her dad's house, and he was a drinker, and he used to get drunk all the time. And I didn't know at the time, but looking back now, I can see that he was an alcoholic. I mean, because sometimes he wouldn't come home, some days he wouldn't come home. Okay, and now I know. But at the time, I didn't know. I just knew that he seemed like kind of a fun guy to me. And I had never really drank before in my life. I mean, I'd seen it. And once again, I was brought up in an area where they would drink, maybe have one or two drinks on Saturday night, and that was it. My mom would quit because her lips would get a little numb, you know. And I mean, you know, she did, like at Christmas, she'll have a drink. She said, oh, that's enough. My tongue's getting numb. And that's when I say, man, get it on now, Mom. It's starting to work. Here, go. You know. But I was... I was 14 years old, and I'd never drank before, and I was over at this girl's house, and he came home half-crocked and said, you want to have a drink with me, boy? He always called me boy, and I used to tell him, my name's not Roy, so I called you boy, so I said, okay, and he said, you want to have a drink with me? I said, sure. You know, I mean, my voice was cracking then, and you know, acne, and most 14-year-olds have. I had that stuff, too. And I figured that, well, sure, I mean, want to impress her. You know, I mean, I don't want to look like I don't know what I'm doing. And he says, I'll tell you what. He said, we'll have a chugging contest. You know what that is? I said, sure. I do it all the time. And I just said, now, you know, I'm sure I don't exactly know what I said, but it probably had something to do with the effect of, you know how to do it the way we do it, don't you? And he said, well, yeah, sure, we're going to fill up the glasses, and somebody's going to say go, and whoever finishes it first wins. You know, and that's all I needed to hear because I'm a fast learner. And I'm an alcoholic. I can walk in a room and in 2 minutes know exactly what to do, where to do it, and how to do it. So I said, yeah, that's right. That's the way we do it. So he says, well, he says, let's do this. So he had warm beer. Okay, so that's what we started with, warm beer. We had like a 12-ounce glass, and we filled it up. And, you know, the girl was, she was like the timekeeper. She was supposed to say, go. You know, she's like a, you know, 1960s Vanna White for drinking, I guess. I don't know. And she said, go. And I knocked that glass down, and he did too. And first time I'd ever drank. Never had alcohol in me before. And my mouth's watering thinking about it. I better talk to my sponsor after the meeting. God, isn't that funny? Just, you know. Maybe we should talk about pancakes at, you know, Country Inn or something. So I knocked that drink down in my mouth instantly, man. My lip got numb. I can still feel it to this day. I mean, that was, what, 24 years ago. Okay, long, long time ago. I can still remember it. And my chest started pounding. And my stomach got warm, my eyes watered, my throat got hot, my feet started tingling, you know. And she said, well, you both finish at the same time. He said, well, we're going to do it again. I said, yeah, let's do it again, man, you know. So we filled up another thing of warm beer, and she said, go, man, and I knocked that down. And I looked at him, and he looked at me, and we finished the same time again. And he was all out of beer, so we had to go to champagne. And, well, I wish we would have stopped at the champagne. Let me finish. And, you know, I wish they put on those bottles, do not mix with other types of alcohol, you know. You ever notice on the warning label they never put stuff like, you know, do not drive a car while, you know, don't operate a vehicle while drinking this stuff, or, you know, heavy amounts of this stuff could lead to AA meetings. Or, constant usage of this could make everything go away in your life, including your self-respect. So anyways, I ended up knocking that thing down, and we went to the champagne, and it was ready, set, go, and I drank that down, and that tasted different, didn't have as much bite, and it actually tasted like crap. It tasted like water does nowadays, actually. You know, we finished off a bottle of that, and I was keeping up with him. Now, bear in mind, this guy has invested many years drinking. Okay, he was what I'd considered a seasoned drinker. I mean, this guy knew how to drink, and I was like a newcomer drinker. Okay, and I was keeping up with him. You know, so I was thinking, shit, I'm good at something, man. I'm starting to feel good about myself. And all he had left was scotch. So he said, well, we got to go to the scotch. I said, great, let's do it, man. You know, I didn't know. And she said, ready, set, go. And I took about a half a hit and went, like that, because that shit had some bite to it, right? I mean, that wasn't that little beer champagne crap. I mean, that stuff had some bite to it. And he won that round, of course. Well, I was drunk. I didn't care, you know. And what I did is I proceeded to tell him, and this was within like a 10-minute, 15-minute period of time. It didn't take long for me to get this way. I told him I thought he was an asshole, I was screwing his daughter, and I called him out in the street. Okay? Okay. Now, would somebody do this to a drinking partner? I mean, come on. Really. I mean, if somebody was to do that to me now, I would never drink with them again. You know that? Especially my booze. I mean, the guy supplied the booze, and I had the audacity to do that shit. So, you know, he kind of calmed me down, and I walked downstairs. They were fairly well-to-do, and they had it downstairs to their house. And they even had a pool table down there, and it was finished, not like this room here. And, oh, sorry. I understand the carpet's coming for the wall next week. And so what happened is we ended up... well, we didn't. I guess I did. I ended up laying on the pool table, and I just like, everything was, you know, the spins, and you get one leg over the side of the pool table. Nobody taught me how to do this. It was just all innate. Like, it was innate. I knew exactly what to do. I closed both eyes and saw it was worse, so I like closed, kept them open, it was bad. Then I kind of probably just slipped on my finger with one eye, and all of a sudden I said, aha. This stopped the room. And then after about 2 minutes, my stomach started going, right? And I saw this pocket, you know where balls go in? And I just, yeah, you're getting ahead of me here, right? And I got my face positioned right there and went, and just filled it up all the way to the top, right? Okay? So, So needless to say, he never asked me to come back for any chugging contests, okay? But that was my first drinking experience. Now, two things real quickly about that experience. Number one, I held on to that experience for many years. Because let me tell you, wouldn't you agree, that was a good time. That was a good, successful evening drinking, okay? I mean, free booze, okay? I was with a girl, okay? I got drunk. I pissed some guy off, called him out, and he didn't go out in the street, right? And then I threw up on his property. That's a successful evening drinking, right? Okay? Right? Okay? And I want to tell you, if I could do that again, if I could do that tonight, if I could find him and her again, I'd do it right now, right? But no. If I could do that tonight, I wouldn't be sitting here in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. Okay? My drinking didn't stay that much fun. It really didn't. And I held on to that experience for many years. Many years after alcohol was fun to drink. I mean, I'm talking about the kind of drinking where, you know, you wake up, you have no money, you're shaking, you need something, so you go sell blood and you remember that you just did it yesterday, you know? And then you're really in a hell dilemma, right? You don't know what to do now. You know, so you walk into a store and you steal a bottle and you go out and you get take care of the shakes and all that, and you're convincing yourself that this is good times, this is fun, I'm having fun doing this. Okay? That's alcoholic drinking, okay? And I held on to that experience for many years. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, they said, you can't drink anymore. And my thought was, my God, I can't have any fun anymore. I mean, I really have fun drinking, right? Because I remember that first experience. And I held on to that first experience for many years. The other thing, too, is I experienced the thing that many of us experience the next morning. You know that feeling? The thing that made you feel so good the night before made you feel so bad this morning, right? And I mean, I had the dilemma that most of us have, and most of us have chosen the way I chose. But there's many people that I've met that did what I did the first night. Well, maybe not quite as well as I did it, but I mean, they did it in their own way. And do you realize they woke up the next morning and they felt just as bad as I did? And do you realize a lot of them said they were never going to drink again, and they didn't? They didn't ever drink again just because that one silly little experience. But see, I did what all of us did. We woke up the next morning feeling like shit, and we said to ourselves, I'll never do it again, and the next thing you knew, we were doing it again. And for some of us, it was 6 months later, 3 months later, and then eventually we got good, and I'm sure some of us got to do it all the time. Okay? And that's what happens, the progression of the alcoholic. The progression of the alcohol gets worse, never better. So what happened? Anyways, 10 years sober, life changed. I had my first son born. It was interesting. It was on September 4th, 1987, and my sobriety date is September 5th, 1977. And you know, if my wife could have held out 3 more hours, you know, my son would have been born on my 10th AA birthday. And I remember telling the doctors, "No, keep her legs closed," you know. Just 3 more hours, man, you can hold out, you know. But I mean, that was an interesting, most interesting, unbelievable experience of my life, seeing my son born. I married a woman in AA. She was about a month sober when she picked me up. And true story, she was here, she'd tell you the opposite. But it's, you know, she came up to me, it was my 5th AA birthday, and she came up to me, and they were having an AA birthday party at someone's house. And for my 5th AA birthday, and she asked if she could come along with me. And I said, well, you're new, you should ask your sponsor. And she said, well, I did, and she thought I should come up and just ask you, you know, and let you know exactly how I feel. And I thought, oh, Jesus, here it goes. You know, new female AA feelings coming out, right? So I said, well, go ahead, you know. She says, well, you know, I'm not going to tell you what she said. But what she said was it was complimentary, but I thought it was quite forward, too, of her. And trying to get me to, you know, cripple shoot. That's what she was trying to do. And we ended up getting married about 4.5 years later. And it's been, you know, a good relationship. We've been married almost 5 years now. And she'll be celebrating 9 years sobriety next month, as a matter of fact. And, well, that's right, if you really care, you'll give us more money after the meeting. We got rent due pretty soon. And clapping doesn't work around the house, believe me. So, I mean, that's amazing. And I had a second son born about 19 months later, little Johnny, who, I mean, the guy's just something. I keep looking for the sixes in his head. I mean, that's a terrible thing to say, but I mean... I mean, you know, I figured, you know, Mary's a, my wife, she's a real alkie, okay? And, you know, I mean, I didn't half measure it either. So I figured the kids were born on the loser side of the wheel to start with, you know. So, I mean, you know, the best thing that we could probably do is make sure that we stay sane enough to help them out if one day they need it, you know. But, I mean, it's a good life. I've got two daughters from my wife, you know, so I've got four children that I'm raising, and there's a lot of responsibility there. And, you know, it doesn't get easy. It doesn't get easy. I mean, it's not expensive raising people nowadays, and, you know, braces aren't cheap, and designer clothes aren't cheap, and, you know, all that kind of garbage that's going on isn't cheap. And, you know, they want to do the things that they want to do, and I already know what they want to do, and I already know what they're going to do, and I don't want to do it because I already know what the results are from what they want to do because I've done it, right? And... you know, and it's a good life, and I wouldn't have any of that if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, if it wasn't for all the people that walked before me that took the time to share with me what it was like for them and what it's like now for them, and if it wasn't for the opportunity I had to meet people and to be with the kind of people I never thought I'd ever be with, and if it wasn't for the opportunity I had to be able to get involved with Alcoholics Anonymous and work the steps the way the program was designed, I wouldn't have all the things I have today in my life, and it's all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, it's a great program, you know, and I can stand up and say at 14 years sober, I've spent, you know, a good portion of my life, I've spent almost my whole adult life in Alcoholics Anonymous, and I can tell you that I'm a success in life today, and it's due in part because of Alcoholics Anonymous and nothing else. You know, so it's very important, I believe, for somebody like me to keep remembering where I came from, but more importantly, remember that I have a place to go, and I have people to talk to and watch the people in front of me, and for me to stay with those people and realize... you know, realize that, hey, you know, not every day is going to be great, but to realize that, you know, just for today, things are going to be a certain way, and they don't always have to be that way. And to realize, too, that there is a God, and I'm not God, and neither are you guys. You know, and to realize that God can and will, and He has for me. Thank you.